Hi, everyone. This is Dr. Cheryl Selman, and welcome to What Women Must Know. Thank you for joining me for another opportunity to become empowered with truthful information so you can make the most informed decisions possible regarding your health and well-being. As always, this show is great opportunity to have in-depth conversations with people that really inspire me, and I know they will inspire you to create a healthier life. And by the way, if you are listening to the show for the first time, please visit my website, What Women Must Know, opt into my newsletter because you'll get free special reports. You'll be able to get these radio shows emailed to you directly so you don't miss any of them. And if you also just want to hop over to my Facebook page, you can like me there, and I post on a daily basis. And I just glean through the best information that I think really will make a difference to your health and keep you aware and educated. So please be my guest. Take advantage of all these educational opportunities. Speaking of educational opportunities, we're going to have a great show today because we're going to be talking to one of the experts that will be helping us to understand more about getting to the root cause issues behind all hormonal imbalances for women and for men. So we have quite an enlightening conversation in store for you. My guest today is Dr. Andrew Rostenberg. He is a chiropractor, kinesiologist, functional medicine expert, methylation researcher, and director of Red Mountain Natural Medicine in Boise, Idaho. In addition to running a busy practice, Dr. Rostenberg has developed cutting-edge protocols using methylation pathways designed to optimize biochemistry, detoxification, digestion, brain function, and more. He founded the methylation research and educational website beyondmthfr.com as a resource for patients and doctors. He has clinical experience treating patients of all ages and walks of life, ranging from elite athletes and children to those suffering from complex digestive, autoimmune, and neurological diseases. So we are in for quite a fascinating conversation today. So welcome, Dr. Andrew Rostenberg, to the show today.
Good morning, Dr. Selman. Thank you for inviting me on your show.
Well, you're very welcome. And I just have to share with everyone listening that, you know, as I am always scanning the horizon of people who are really providing leading-edge information and knowledge for my benefit and, of course, information that I want to share, I came across your work and your YouTubes, and I was really impressed. I thought you just did a brilliant job at explaining very important processes in the body that I think are not easily understood. So I thought, oh, you are just the perfect person to have on the show to help us understand more of what leading-edge research is telling us so we can truly get to the root cause of our health issues and also our hormonal imbalances. So it's just a pleasure to have you here today. And, you know, we're going to be talking about some of this leading-edge research. You know, you have this website, beyondmthfr.com. We talk about methylation. This is a really important topic, and I have to say most people don't have a clue what it means, yet it's so profound for our health and well-being. I feel we really need to address it on the show. We need to have people expand their horizons on issues and topics that have a direct impact on their health and their risks for health problems, hormonal imbalances, neurological problems. So I think we're just going to jump right in and have you help us understand this term, which is getting very popular now, methylation, what that is and why it's important for us to know about it and what to do. So let's just start there.
All right, Dr. Selman, that's a big question, but I think obviously it's a very important one for your audience and for doctors as well. And you know, just to point this out to your audience, I mean, what we're going to talk about is, you know, the information is out there. It's just, it's the scientific language itself is very sort of obtuse, and it's almost like you might as well be speaking Greek or Latin. It does challenge us to, you know, understand what they're really saying and use English or our native tongue to make it make sense. And that is something I do spend a lot of time on trying to understand what the science is really saying. But methylation is a verb. So think of it this way for your audience. It's a verb. It means to take a carbon atom and move it around and stick it to something. At its basic level, that's all it is. We're carbon-based organisms. We're made out of carbon. We have lots of other things that make us work, but at the core of our being, we are carbon-based. So methylation gets down to the very, you know, essence of our most basic chemistry inside of our cells. And this cycle, they call it a methylation cycle because it works a lot like a set of gears, or another way to describe it would be like a traffic pattern in a city. You know, things have a cycle. There's times of the day during the city where the traffic is heavy. There's times of the day where the traffic is light. Observe it for a while, and you'll see a predictable pattern of, you know, where the busyness is and where the blockages are. And that's a really good analogy to kind of use to understand methylation. And so this process of moving carbon around, you know, it involves the production of antioxidants. It involves the growth of tissue. It involves the repair of tissue. So you have all of those three real important aspects involved with methylation, but there's still even a little more to it than that. There's also the process of detoxification. So when we study methylation, the reason it has so much value for us, trying to understand this traffic pattern, if you will, inside of our cells, we're trying to understand which individuals in our society, based on certain genes, are going to have a traffic problem, a blockage, a slow, you know, a choke point in their chemistry that may make them more susceptible to cancer, heart disease, depression, or some other, you know, condition down the road. And, you know, as frightening and I would say, you know, sometimes emotionally challenging as those conditions are, there is a reason why things happen. And I think you would, being a natural doctor yourself, you'd have to agree that, you know, the body doesn't make mistakes. It does everything for a reason. And whether we have a hormone problem or a neurological problem, a developmental issue, a pregnancy issue, you know, we're dealing with prevention of breast cancer, the treatment of it, or the recovery from surgery, you know, all these different health aspects that we experience during life have a methylation component. So that's the value of me, the value that I've found looking at methylation is it's because it's so important and it's so basic to all of our chemistry, it really does have an impact in every health problem that people face. So understanding more about methylation gives us an advantage to pick the right food, the right nutrients, to give our body what it needs so it can be its best and express the highest level of health every day. So that's kind of just an introduction to, you know, how I would just kind of describe methylation to those who haven't really heard it before.
And I just, you know, want to ask you, we've been hearing more, this is kind of a buzzword in the, you know, functional medicine, integrative medicine world. Primarily, people know if they have impaired ability to methylate is through doing testing, looking at some of their genomic expressions, correct? And that's primarily how people find out about their inherited
disease.
Yeah.
So, testing.
Yeah. So, you know, I mean, I do a lot of nutrigenomic testing. Obviously, you do as well. And I encourage people to do nutrigenomic testing, which is so profound. And I've talked about it many times on my show. And it definitely helped me to save my life, learning what I've learned, and it's helped many of my patients. But let's talk about this in a way. So even if people choose not to test, which is getting easier to do, and it's incorporated in many tests now, but if people don't want to do the test to see if they've got predispositions to be impaired in their ability to move these carbon atoms around, let's talk about what everyone needs to know to support themselves. And I just want people to understand the reason we're talking about this is because this issue directly impacts your risk of many health issues, as you kind of touched upon. But maybe we should go in a little bit more on some of the reasons why we need to understand how our body is methylating and all the consequences if we don't give our body the right nutrients to support this vital metabolic process in the body?
Those are all very good questions, Dr. Selman. And I'll take a, you know, I'll take an approach here where we'll talk first about the problems and kind of get the, you know, kind of hit the reptilian button for a second to get us sort of paying attention to all the bad things that happen when this doesn't work. Not to spread fear to get my message across, but say, hey, look, this is what you're going to look for. And then we'll talk about, you know, what solutions are available and how many great natural solutions are available to really just lower your risk practically to zero for these things that we've talked about. So the reason that methylation is important is you're involving, as I mentioned earlier, detoxification, growth, and repair. So we're talking about aging. We're talking about if cells divide correctly, do they make the right amount of DNA? And is that DNA, once it's built, is it protected or does it get damaged because there's too much inflammation in the cell? And now that you damage DNA, well, now you begin to express, a cancer possibility, a cancer situation. So for all the audience out there, let's say, you're someone listening and you don't want to do the genetic testing, as Dr. Selman mentioned, and that's fine. Really what you need to do is listen to what your health has been and kind of think about your family's health. If you come from a family where there's been a history of cancer, especially breast or prostate, uterine, ovarian, testicular, or perhaps you come from a family with a history of heart disease, you know, people are having strokes or, you know, major cardiovascular events at an age maybe 48, 52. I mean, this is very, very young to be having cardiovascular disease and life-threatening cardiovascular problems. It's very young. Or maybe you have a family history of depression. And, you know, those are kind of the three big ones to start with. So if you have that lineage in your family, you know, people will say, well, it's genetic. You don't even have to be a methylation researcher or an expert in natural medicine to know that, you know, you talk to people about what happens in their family. They go, oh, that's just our genes. We have bad genes. It's just genetic. And there's some truth to that. There's some truth to that. But I am adamant that people who begin to look at their genes and study methylation understand that your genes are your tendency, but they're not your destiny. That's really very, very important to understand. Your genes respond to the environment so much more than we give them credit for. And in a lot of ways, your genes are just passive and the environment's active. And so, you know, if we live healthy, if we make healthy decisions, if we sleep well, we eat well, we think well, we move well, we drink clean water, we, you know, make those important steps that Dr. Selman and natural doctors like her talk about, you reduce your risk because you change the environment. But let's talk about some of the other signs and symptoms of methylation problems. I would say in females, probably the number one issue I see in my clinic for methylation problems in females are gallbladder-related. Estrogen dominance, gallbladder-related problems. And it might not make sense in the beginning how the gallbladder is related to methylation, but as I mentioned earlier, the methylation controls and has a huge influence on detoxification. And when women have genes in their methylation cycle that are going slower, and I should maybe back up for a moment and mention this as well, the problem that science has identified in our methylation cycle is that it's not that something's going too fast and it won't slow down. It's something's going too slow and it won't speed up. That's what we need to understand. Using the traffic analogy, we're going from an 8-lane superhighway down to a 2-lane country road, and that works as long as the traffic is light or if we have another way around that bottleneck. But if that's the only situation we have, there will be a traffic jam in real life, and there'll be a traffic jam inside of our bodies with our chemistry. So that's the issue with methylation, is that things have slowed down. So you've slowed down the production of antioxidants. You've slowed down the production of cell repair. You've slowed down the cell growth rate. And you've slowed down detoxification. So you have these four aspects that are now just in this person's body, oftentimes going slow. So let's say a woman, you know, grows up in our eating standard American diet. She eats genetically modified food. It's full of pesticides and herbicides that act like estrogen. So not only does she have the estrogen that her body makes, she's getting the estrogen from the environment, from the Roundup that they're spraying around her house to the chemicals in her carpet, in her water, in her shampoo. I mean, these are the ideas. This is where these toxins come from. They've kind of permeated our whole environment. So now you have a woman with methylation issues. who, just like her friends and her family and, you know, people next door and across town, they're all living in this kind of toxic soup that we have created. Now, the woman with methylation issues will be less able to get rid of these toxic petrochemicals, as well as she'll be less able to get rid of the estrogen that she's making. So over time, what we see is that the estrogen levels build up because her body makes it every day. She's still coming into contact with it, but it's difficult for her methylation cycle to go fast enough to fully remove these chemicals from her body. And the way we remove most toxins is through the bile. Now, the urine has some toxins in it. I mean, some, you know, obviously certain toxins go out in the urine, but not very much compared to the gallbladder. So the gallbladder becomes this trash can that has to hold on to all the nasty stuff the liver's trying to get rid of. So what we see with women, just to kind of circle back, one of the, to your audience, you know, if you have a family history of gallbladder problems, a family history of, you know, estrogen dominance, heavy periods, clotting, endometriosis, these all line up under the category of estrogen dominance. I'm sure Dr. Selman, you know, has mentioned that before. But what happens in the female body when there's a methylation issue? There's a traffic jam, and your body can't get this estrogen from the 8-lane superhighway past the 2-lane bottleneck and into the gallbladder so that you can get rid of it. And so over time, the gallbladder becomes dysfunctional. And so, you know, this is why on a physical exam or on a history, this is one of the main things we see. We see gallbladder problems in women who have methylation issues. So I'll pause there, Dr. Selman, and you know, kind of open up the floor for another comment.
Okay, so that's really such important information. We are looking at fundamental underlying biochemical processes that we have inherited a deficiency. They're just not responding appropriately, and then it creates all these downstream effects in our biochemistry. And the issue of methylation, or this ability, as you were saying, to facilitate this movement of function is powerful. I mean, the fact that women have a higher incidence of gallbladder surgeries, I mean, this is also a problem if women have estrogen dominance or are taking their hormones. If they have, and we have to say, in your experience, let me just ask you this question. In your experience, what percentage of people have this impaired ability to do this process called methylation?
I've heard everything from nearly 100% to about 75% of people have this problem. So genetically, it's about genetically, about 75% of people have one copy out of four. Some people have, you know, maybe 15% have the really bad situation, and there's another 30% have a less worse situation, and it kind of, going across the gradient. Maybe about 25% of people, when we do the genetic report, for example, they don't inherit any of the bad copies. So you get about 25% who have no bad copies, and then 75% do, and then there's various degrees of how slow it has how the severity of their genetic issue. But I just want to point out too that you bring up a good point, Dr. Selman, about, you know, kind of what I hear in the question is, can you have a genetic type problem without having the gene? Of course you can. You can still have a biochemical bottleneck in your body even if you don't have the genetics that make that more likely. And remember, in the beginning, I wanted to point out, and I think it's worth repeating, that these genetic pathways are your tendency. It's not about saying, oh, well, see, I'm sick because of my genes. That thought doesn't really work. It's not valid. We're sick because of an environment, because of stress, because of poor choices and bad advice, really, from, you know, other doctors and healthcare providers. So you can, about 75% of people have the de facto inherited genetic methylation type issues. But really, anyone is capable of experiencing a problem in that system. You can create a deficiency through diet and a toxicity through lifestyle that would create biochemically the exact same problem and as someone who has a really bad genetic issue in that area. Does that make sense for?
Yes, and I think it's really important to emphasize we're not talking about a genetic mutation here. We're talking about software glitches in our genes. That's how I like to say it. So there's like
that's a great point.
We inherited, you know, a software glitch from one of our parents, which just makes the process inefficient. It's not working up to its to optimal functioning. It's not our body doesn't get the messages so we can have 100% efficiency at certain biochemical processes. So it's not a genetic defect. It's this genomic issue, the epigenetics, the software glitch. So, you know, we talked about if we have this process in our body that's inefficient and we have these log jams going on, I really want us to explore the other ways it shows up in the other health conditions, because it's become such a hot topic because so many issues are impacted if we're have this inability to do this process because of key nutrient deficiencies, which we'll talk about in a second. But I want people to understand the broad scope. So just go in and talk about all the issues and the manifestations of imbalances due to methylation impairment that's showing up right now in our society.
Another great question, and I think it is important to recognize this list. And I'll qualify this and say this list is probably incomplete because of how important and how widespread methylation issues can be. But what first got me interested into this line of thinking is, you know, I became a chiropractor because, you know, they're natural-minded and they like to solve problems logically, and they really respect the fact that the body heals itself, and that always has resonated with me. So that was why I chose that path, and I enjoy working with my hands. But you know, just working on the physical side of issues was never there's more to the story, as you know, with health. So I jumped into functional medicine right away as a student in my first couple months in my doctoral program. But what got my attention with methylation was, you know, we're here in chiropractic college learning about symmetry, body shape, you know, the shape of curves, the architecture of the body, the weight-bearing structures. And then we start learning about what are called normal variants. I'm like, well, that's kind of an oxymoron, normal variant. Is it normal or is it a variant? You know, we're kind of playing with words. And what I'm talking about are the fact that when many people go and get x-rays or they get a radiology report, they might come back and it shows that they have an extra vertebrae in their spine, or they had a mild form of spina bifida called spina bifida occulta, or some other, you know, change to the symmetry of the body. And so this is really where I started to jump into this area of research. It's fascinated me. I thought, wow, so we know that women, if they don't take certain B vitamins, give birth to babies with spina bifida. We know there's a connection. There's the methylation connection. And so starting from that idea, because I have a little bit of spina bifida occulta in my body that I started, you know, part of the reason we get into this is to kind of understand our own journey and our own health. So I started to look at it from that lens. I said, okay, what does the research say about methylation processes and body symmetry? And there's a whole lot of things that show up. Methylation problems are more severe if they happen to express and be a problem when a baby is growing inside of the mom during gestation, just after conception. If the mom's body, if her health isn't very good and she doesn't have a lot of vitamins that she can run her body with, much less have any extra to give to a growing person, that's when the methylation problems will get worse. Over time, the older you are, the less severe, I would say, the methylation problems will appear to the naked eye. In other words, if you see a baby growing inside of a mother's, you know, a baby born, and the baby's born with, you know, something wrong with a cleft palate, perhaps, or a spina bifida, or congenital heart malformation, or some organ that didn't form correctly, you're looking at a methylation problem that happened during the womb, okay? And so that's really what got my attention, was that methylation issues change the physical shape of the body. I thought, wow, this is crazy. You can have biochemical problems change the shape of the body. Well, what else can it do? So just, you know, in answering this question, what are the things we look at? What's this broad spectrum of diseases we see and health problems we see with methylation. So on the looking at a child, looking at an infant and a newborn, you're going to see the very most severe types of problems will be Down syndrome, Turner's, Klinefelter's, Fragile X. A chromosomal problem is directly related to a methylation problem that happened right after conception or right before. So that's like the most severe. That is, as you mentioned earlier, that's a genetic defect. That's actually having cells with the wrong number and wrong amount of genetic material. That's a very severe manifestation of a methylation problem, and the research is very clear on that. The next most, you know, kind of the next thing you'll see, that let's say that baby, as it grew, didn't have the methylation problem in the beginning, so it got the right number of chromosomes. Now we're talking about what you suggested earlier, which is a great analogy, that it's kind of a software glitch. So all cells now have the right amount of DNA, but now the pathway's kind of sluggish. There's that log jam. There's that traffic jam. And so we need, and as we, and you know, as we come bring it to a close today, we'll show what you can do to fix that. But the baby survives the first, you know, test. It gets all the genetic material it's supposed to. But let's say inside the mom's body, the mom, you know, doesn't have enough methyl donors, doesn't have enough B vitamins, B9, B12. B9 is going to be the one we're going to talk the most about. It's the main methyl donor in this methylation cycle, plays a very, very important role. But, of course, all the B vitamins are important. But if this child is growing and it doesn't get enough B vitamins, enough folate, enough methyl groups during some part of the gestation process, and that's a guess. We don't know if it's for 5 minutes or 5 hours or 5 days or 5 weeks. We don't yet know that. But we know that for some part of that process, when the baby's growing so fast that sometimes the tissue doesn't grow correctly, you get an incorrectly grown vertebra, you get an extra vertebra, you get a bone that's crooked. Or in the case of spina bifida, you're really looking at, and you know, for the audience listening, I mean, remember, you know, the first thing that forms in as life is conceived is the spinal cord. And so this is growing super quickly, and it's what's called the neural tube. And so there's just a window. There's just a small period of time when these cells have to rapidly grow and grow and grow and grow and fold over and make a tube. And once they close that tube, it's like, okay, go on to the next step, and the next thing starts growing and maturing. And so it's not, you know, there's only just a small window where this process has to happen. It has to happen fast enough. And if it doesn't happen in that allotted time, nature moves on to the next step. And so this is one reason why, you know, a woman who's had a lot of miscarriages has a methylation problem, because the pain of, you know, losing a baby over and over again is absolutely related to these methylation pathways. And so, as I mentioned earlier, methylation controls the speed or has a huge impact on cell division. What is a growing baby but rapidly growing cells? And so if the mom's body, if the genes in the mom or the genes in the baby, often it's both, don't have this logjam you've spoken of, then those cells can't divide fast enough. So the odds of the baby being born with spina bifida, or remember the really tall kid in high school, or, you know, as a teenager at the swimming pool with a dent in their chest, we call that pectus excavatum. And, you know, that's related to methylation issues, because, again, that's a defect in the symmetry of their bones, of their body, cleft palate, et cetera, lots of different issues. So I wanted to mention that. Those are all red flags for methylation. Now, if we move into childhood, you may not show up as an infant. You may look at the baby and a beautiful baby born, all the organs are normal, you know, thank God, and you know, the baby's healthy and sleeps and breastfeeds and that's great. But now, as you go into childhood, different issues might show up that could be methylation issues as well. You could have you could start to see scoliosis during teenager, puberty and teenage development. You could see, changes in limb length. You notice they have a shorter leg. You notice they have, like I mentioned earlier, the chest deformity, pectus excavatum. There's other kinds of chest deformities. So just from a point of view for your audience, you know, you'll see physical signs in your children or in young people of a methylation problem because of the lack of symmetry. So that's really key. The other thing you'll see in children, and this will kind of start to segue with what adults experience, you'll see kids that have depression. You'll see kids with you know, learning disabilities and ADD and even maybe epilepsy or at the worst, you know, some schizophrenia on the far end of the spectrum, autism as well. And these are all highly related to methylation. You know, they did studies with autistics, and this was the Journal of American Physicians and Surgeons 2004 that, you know, 98% of autistics have an MTHFR problem. And as I mentioned before, that's higher than the average in the society. You know, the average is maybe 75% or so in the general population, but clearly almost 100% of all autistic children have this problem with MTHFR. I think the research supports that pretty well. And so, you know, I've talked about, you know, issues that happen right when the baby's conceived, talked about issues that happen during gestation. You get the symmetry problems. Now you look at childhood and you start to notice, you know, this kid is, you know, he's breaking out in rashes. He can't handle smells. He can't detoxify. It seems like he can't detoxify. When he sweats, he gets a rash. You know, there's some kind of toxic buildup in his system. Those are going to be, okay, we got some methylation issues with kids, and especially the neurotransmitters, the depression, kids who get angry when they don't eat, really grumpy, can't focus, they don't sleep well, they, you know, have horrible sleep habits. You put them to bed at 8, they're still bouncing around the room at 11:30, 12 at night. I mean, you're looking at a serotonin, melatonin, dopamine imbalance that all goes back and has an impact on the methylation cycle, or the methylation cycle has a huge impact on those things. And so now I'm bringing it into the adult realm, just kind of walking you through time here. Now you're going to get into diseases that many listeners are going to be very much aware of. You're going to look at stroke, having blood clots, pulmonary embolisms, you know, cardiovascular disease, heart disease, cancers, environmental illness, not being able to walk in the mall and like walk by, you know, Bath and Body Works, you know, all that chemical stuff they put into those products to make them smell. I mean, some patients of mine, they can't come within 100 yards of that place. It's just they don't have the ability to detoxify. Their methylation cycle is so imbalanced, they can't get rid of those toxins. And then another one that's important to recognize is Alzheimer's. And then they've looked at Alzheimer's as, you know, diabetes of the brain. It's really didn't exist. In 1980, it wasn't even on the top 20 causes of death. And now it's the sixth leading cause of death in the United States in about 35 years. So we have a huge problem with our brain health. And what they find with people, you know, so speaking directly to women, you know, I just want to say one more thing and I'll hand it back to you, Dr. Selman, just to wrap this up. But, you know, women experience a protection of heart disease and stroke when they're having their cycles. So when women are premenopausal, they experience less heart disease, less stroke, and less cardiovascular complications. And something happens when women hit menopause, and their risk goes up actually higher than men's. And so we've been able to look at some research on that and discover that, well, you have a gene in your body that helps you make choline. And choline is this fascinating molecule. It's a methyl donor. It builds white matter. It builds your brain. If you take choline when you're pregnant, you actually give birth to babies with bigger brains. There's more blood vessels in the brain. It's really incredible. And choline is produced only in the presence of estrogen. So when women are pregnant, the body upregulates estrogen production and it upregulates choline production. And so you get to feed the baby all of these great choline molecules so that you can grow a baby from scratch, build that nervous system from scratch. But of course, as women are dealing with adrenal fatigue and stress and all these other health problems that we face, they hit menopause and their estrogen levels crash and their production of choline crashes, and now you have an elevated risk of stroke and heart disease. So you can see there's so many kind of interwoven connections here, but I'll hand it back to you for now.
Yeah, that was great. And I think we have to also mention the increased risk of cancers if you can't methylate, this process is impaired, increased risk of breast cancer in women and prostate cancer in men, and as well as cardiovascular and, as you said, all dementia and Alzheimer's and autism. So it's a big issue, which is why we're talking about it. And it just, you know, you're talking about it, I also want to mention to people one of the reasons that a blood workup includes homocysteine, one of the tests that is done on a general blood workup for people, homocysteine is a risk factor for strokes and blood clots, and homocysteine is a marker that indicates impairment in methylation. So it shows up as increased risk of blood clots and strokes. But the downstream effect that, or is it the upstream? the root cause of it is coming from this impairment of methylation cycle. So it's really affecting so many issues across the board at all ages. And there are some simple things we can do. I do encourage people to do the genomic test to see if you've inherited to whatever extent, greater or lesser extent, a risk. I think that's always useful, but it's not necessary. So I think we really want to talk about what are the ways that with supplements and nutrition that everyone needs to be incorporating in their protocols and in their diets that's protective. Because we can assume the vast majority of people have an issue to a greater or lesser extent with this process we've been talking about, methylation.
Absolutely. I mean, this is where the rubber meets the road. You know, there's no point in, dedicating your life to figuring out why problems happen if there's no actionable steps you could take to fix them. Otherwise, we should just, do something else. So there's a lot we can do. There's so many actionable things that we can take personal responsibility for to improve our methylation. The most important group who does this are women who may become pregnant. In my opinion, that's where you're going to see the biggest leverage, the biggest benefit, not just to the individual who's doing these processes, but also to the next generation. You brought something up that we should talk a little bit about, cancer and how methylation impacts that. And you might be wondering, well, how does this cycle of methylation impact our development of cancer? Well, it comes back to the idea that your genes are like this giant book, this huge phone book, this huge set of instructions. And like, you would never read the entire phone book every day in order to call someone or to make something happen. You just pick the part of the book you need, you find the person you need, you make that phone call, and now you've got the plumber coming over to fix your pipe or the contractor coming over to build your, remodel whatever you're working on. And in the same way your body works, it doesn't turn all the genes on all at once. It really carefully controls which gene is being turned on. And the gatekeeper, the control mechanism for that process is methylation. So it's like the genes are this giant book, and in order to not read the book every day all the way through all the time, the body puts carbon atoms, the carbon methylation molecule, on top of a gene that it wants to silence. If you want to silence a gene, you put a carbon atom on top of it, and when the body has its little device that goes along the kind of like a, maybe it's analogous to the fingers of someone who is blind reading Braille, the body runs its fingers along the DNA, and wherever it's methylated, there's no information being given, and where the methyl groups are gone, it reads that and starts to make whatever that instruction was. So you can see that methylation basically has this leverage by turning genes on and off that have huge consequences for us. And so this is all epigenetics, which means, again, your genes are not your, it's not victimhood, it's not your destiny, it's just your tendency, especially when you're under stress. So if we can change the environment with our lifestyle and with natural medicine and good nutrition, which I'm going to get into here, then you begin to change how those molecules are sitting on top of the DNA. But I want to just share with this idea with you that if you're an individual who has, been on 20 rounds of antibiotics and hormone replacement and had gallbladder issues and had heavy periods and clotting and, had a history of breast cancer, I mean, what you're seeing in your body is you've got gut issues now that are hurting your digestive process, that's creating inflammation, and now you have hormones that are building up that your body's not able to get rid of. And so all your methyl groups are going to get used up trying to put those fires out. And so when your cells divide, there's less methyl groups available to make sure they get stuck onto the DNA the right way. And so if we have cancer genes that have a methyl group on them, we never get cancer. It's actually impossible for that cancer gene to turn on and become cancer when the methyl group is stuck on that. But imagine what happens, as we've described so far for you this past 40 minutes, if you don't have enough methyl groups available because you have a traffic jam, you can't get them where they need to go quick enough, you may end up having cells divide that don't have the methyl group in the right place. And now you have the body reading the instructions for more cancer-like behavior, and those cells become more cancer-like. So this is, in a simplistic way, how important these methyl groups are. It's not just everything we've talked about so far. Ultimately, it's, you know, controlling which genes turn on and off, and that's really, really important stuff. So,
wait, can I just jump in here? Because this is
sure.
such an important point. Is this related to the, you know, the BRCA gene issue? Is this what we're really talking about when people are looking at these, you know, the breast cancer genes we've heard so much about? This is really the process that we're concerned about, isn't it?
It is. And, you know, when you have the BRCA1, BRCA2 gene, you know, there's a lot of fear out there. And I think there's, whenever there's a lot of fear, there's a lot of ignorance. Unfortunately, they tend to go hand in hand. And, you know, from my understanding, you know, there's been studies looking at coffee intake, and coffee is a methyl donor. So what this ends up meaning is coffee has a molecule in it called trimethylglycine. Trimethyl, three methyl groups glued to a glycine group. So there's a lot of methyl donors, a lot of methylation support in coffee, actually. So women who have the BRCA gene, no one can dispute they have an elevated risk of cancer. That's been proven. But what's really fascinating is studies have been done that shows that they reduce their risk about the same amount that their risk is increased by having 6 cups of coffee a day or more. And I'm not saying that everybody listening needs to drink 6 cups of coffee. It's just that the women who did drink 6 cups of coffee got a lot of methyl groups in their diet, and they got a lot lower risk of breast cancer, even though they had BRCA1 genes. So that ties. What do you think about, have you heard that before, Dr. Selman?
No, I haven't. I haven't heard about the coffee, but it just re-emphasizes that there are supplements that we can take that have the ability to make these donations of these methyl groups, so we can switch the DNA on and off appropriately. And
absolutely.
Yeah, and I just think that that's so important, because there is so much fear, and we think it's a genetic mutation. It's not. It's just this inability to give the right – I love the metaphor of the braille, reading the genes in the right way. So we turn on the ones that need to be turned on, and we turn off the ones, or we don't acknowledge the ones that don't need to be turned on. So so that it's just really important to emphasize that. And what we're talking about is a critical component of optimizing how we get these messages working properly in our body. So I want us – is there anything else you wanted to say about that, Andrew?
Yeah. Dr. Selman, I'd like to just point out that I want to make sure we mention that foliage is where folate comes from. That's why it's named that way. So folate B9, the most important and most powerful methylation support vitamin, is found in leafy greens. It's found in lettuce, spinach, kale, and all the, you know, all these really foliagey vegetables. And what do we have in our society? But we just don't eat. We don't eat enough of this anymore. We just don't. You know, poor people 100 years ago could grow collard greens, and they ate collard greens, rice, and beans a lot, and they were actually quite a bit healthier than us today, because now processed food is so cheap and healthy food is so expensive that it's just totally backwards. So you can get your vitamins from food, and I encourage every patient and everyone I speak to do that. But we've become so depleted. Our soil has been so abused, and, you know, things are just – you need to make sure you have an insurance policy that you're getting all that you need. And that's why we – that's why I recommend supplementation on top of a good diet. I just don't believe – I have seen many people from the thousands of patients I've had who are able to maintain a high level of health without some additional methylation support and the right vitamins added to their diet.
So we need to eat a healthy diet, an organic diet, lots of greens. And let's talk – any other foods that are really supportive of this process of methylation that you recommend?
Absolutely. And I mean, I know this is a topic you've covered before. You know, the cruciferous vegetables have such a profound effect on removing estrogen. And I want to mention to your audience that, you know, when I say remove estrogen, I should qualify that a little bit. I don't always mean that it's pulled out of your body. I mean that your body makes an estrogen molecule, and then it goes into the bloodstream, and it goes to the liver, and the liver is going to change it one of three ways. It just happens that two of the ways the liver changes estrogen become aggressive, inflammatory, what we call proliferative estrogens. They cause cells to divide and grow, and ultimately they can cause some DNA damage and lead to breast cancer, uterus cancer, those kind of things. And the target
and prostate cancer in men, we should say.
Absolutely. Prostate cancer in men, 100% right. They look at the prostate and the uterus as being homologous tissues. So totally, absolutely correct. And so with methylation available, what your body does is it increases the production of a type of estrogen called 2-hydroxy or 2-methoxy estrogen that comes out of the liver, and it's a very calming, anti-inflammatory, protective estrogen. I had a study, you know, where just one recently that they developed a rat, a type of rat that had preeclampsia, and I've had patients with preeclampsia. It's scary, and I'm sure any women listening have gone through it. It's frightening. You know, the baby can't get oxygen. The baby can't get food. It's getting stressed out, so the baby sends a signal to the mom's body to increase blood pressure. Increase blood pressure. I need more. I'm hurting. I need help. And that's why the mom's body goes into that emergency, because it's trying to push blood and nutrition back into the placenta because something's interfering with that blood flow. And so they found that in these rats that had that same problem, all they did was help them methylate their estrogen, and they used 2-methoxy estrogen, and it just removed the preeclampsia right away. So, I mean, how, you know, so if it can change preeclampsia by using methylation support to help you reduce, you know, change your estrogen into more calming estrogen, it's going to also help anyone dealing with recovering from cancer, preventing cancer, et cetera, heart disease. So I just want to point out that and also say that, you know, the cruciferous vegetables and the phytoestrogens in soy, the phytoestrogens in other plants, kudzu, flax, those are very helpful for dealing with high estrogen levels and estrogen toxicity. There's a bit of debate about soy, of course, but the fact is that the countries that have the least amount of breast cancer have the highest amount of soy intake. It's protective. So
as long as it's fermented and organic.
Yes, we have the word. Yeah.
By all means. I mean, there are distinctions, but let's go back to the key vitamins that people should be taking as part of a daily protocol. Because I think the other thing we need to emphasize when we talk about all these issues, which are so vast, but also the depression, the neurotransmitters, the proper readout of the neurotransmitters and making neurotransmitters depend on getting these key nutritional supports. We're going to talk about them. So people who are dealing with depression, anxiety, people who are dealing with addictive behaviors, people who are dealing with schizophrenia, bipolar, these conditions, I mean, they're ready to screen women for depression. What's that going to lead to? It's going to lead to putting more women on antidepressants, put more pregnant women or postpartum women on antidepressants, the worst thing in the world you ever want to be doing. So
Yeah. These
are all related to this process of methylation. So let's go and talk about the best vitamin supplementation that people need to be taking. And everyone really should be taking, even children, because it's protective. Let's go over there before we run out of time.
Absolutely. So if the question of, you know, what does everyone need to take? What's the most important, like, baseline for everybody? I'm a big believer in, you know, making sure that we can absorb what we put in our mouth. So, you know, I like a quality probiotic. The company I work most with is Metagenics. There's a handful of good companies out there, but you want to work with a really top tier company because you get what you pay for, and their quality is really high level. But you want to use probiotics because good bugs poop out methylation vitamins for you. Imagine that, right? So when
they make them, pooping out means they make them.
That's what I should say. Yes.
Okay.
I have toddlers at home, so I talk about poop a lot. But the bugs will eat fiber. They'll eat things that we can't digest, the good bacteria, and they will literally convert the insoluble fiber and the other toxins actually in our gut, and they'll poop. They will release vitamins, B vitamins, and then we'll absorb them. So our gut bacteria is this factory that either works with us or against us. And so I do a lot of gut work. I try to see, gosh, who's been on 20 rounds, 30 rounds, 40 rounds of antibiotics. I mean, that person has to work on their gut first before they can with confidence go and say, hey, I've taken care of my methylation cycle. And maybe that's a topic for another call. But so everybody needs a probiotic that's high quality. I like, a lactobacillus species and a bifidobacterium as a baseline. And then, a good multivitamin is going to have, the 30 or so different minerals and vitamins that our body needs to run its enzymes and chemistry. And that multivitamin needs to have the right kind of folate and B12. That's really, on a simplistic form, that's what you need. You don't want to be taking a multivitamin that has high levels of folic acid or synthetic B12, because you're missing, first of all, you're getting the type of B9 that's hard to convert into the active form. That's why folic acid becomes problematic for people who have these genes in high doses, because in high doses, your body can't, that logjam, a little bit of traffic, you're fine. A little bit of folic acid, it's okay. Again, I said it's in our environment. You're always having a little bit coming in all the time. So when you pick a multivitamin, which everybody should be on, a multimineral multivitamin, make sure you pick one that has methyl tetrahydrofolate. They have different names for it, but really what you're looking for is methyl folate, the active form of B9, and then methyl cobalamin would be as a standard approach. So now you've got your probiotic, you've got your multivitamin. And then I would also...
Wait. This is so important. I want people to understand. You do not want to be taking a supplement that has as an ingredient folic acid. You'll see that a lot, especially in cheaper vitamins. You'll see folic acid. It can't be used. It can't be converted to these methyl groups. And if it's not able to be used, it can actually cause harm floating around the bloodstream. So your multivitamin and supplements must have activated folate or MTHFR, which is another way it's described, as the form of folic acid that is in that formulation. It's a really big one. And you have to have methylcobalamin as the B12 component, methylcobalamin, which is found in most high-quality supplements, which are the only ones you should be taking. Because if you get the wrong type of B12, it's not effective. And if you get the wrong type of folic acid, which is called folic acid, it also is ineffective in giving you these methyl groups that are doing all these amazing jobs to keep us healthy. So that just needs to be emphasized, don't you think, Andrew?
Yeah, it's very important. It's very important.
Yeah, what you're looking for. We have to look for high quality. And fortunately, there's so many companies that are now changing over, taking folic acid out and putting the activated folate in, which is good news.
Absolutely, yeah. There's more and more companies doing that, and absolutely right. And, good supplements are strong enough to change your physiology. I would say that, spending money on a good supplement that costs a little more, you're getting, and if you take it half as much, it's still better than taking a cheap one at a high dose, So just be picky with yourself. It's food. We should not skimp when it comes to feeding ourselves. I mean, people logically know they wouldn't put 75 octane gas in their car and expect it to work well. And we consistently do that as a culture with our gut and our diet. So something good. Good supplements are very important.
Andrew, we only have a minute or so left. What else should we be taking? Is there anything else?
Yes, so we touched on probiotic. I believe everybody should be on an omega-3 support of some kind. There's really no upper limit of issues with fish oils. We routinely recommend up to 12, 15 grams a day of fish oil for people who have neurological issues, ADD, ADHD, who are trying to lose weight, that kind of thing. That's, to me, kind of the core protocol. And then, of course, as many colors of fruits and vegetables every day. The people who eat the most vegetables and the most variety have the lowest levels of cancer across the board all over the world. It's just that's what we need to eat a lot more of. So.
And it's got to be organic.
Has to be organic. In the United States, yes, definitely. I mean, most of the world actually eats organic food compared to what we have. So absolutely. Everything, you got to buy organic in the United States.
Anything else? I know we're trying to cover a big topic, which you have just done such a brilliant job with. I really appreciate the amount of research you put in and how well you really communicate something that can be quite complicated for people. And it was really a great conversation. I want to let people know that they can learn more about you and your services at redmountainclinic.com. Right? Best
that
website?
That is right. That's my clinic website. And then for the research pertaining to what we've spoken about today, I've got a very long and growing list of blogs, videos, and articles on Beyond MTHFR. It's kind of my my platform for sharing this research with everyone. So please
that's
take a look.
BeyondMTHFR.com.
Exactly.
So here we are at the end of the show. Dr. Andrew Rostenberg, you have been fantastic in sharing this important information. We really appreciated your wisdom and your clarity in getting it across to us today. So thank you so much for being with us. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you, Dr. Selman. I appreciate the invitation, and I hope that we were able to give some value to your listeners. They have new things to study, look at, and help improve their health and well-being.
Absolutely. And to all of you listening, thank you for opportunity to keep learning, keep growing. This is Dr. Cheryl Selman. You've been listening to What Women Must Know. My guest today is Dr. Andrew Rostenberg. And remember, always honor the wisdom of your feminine self. Bye for now.